Welcome to the Eclipse Wealth Podcast. This is your guide to making sense of financial planning and wealth management. It's brought to you by Eclipse Private Office and is here to inform, inspire confidence, and spark ideas that help you take control of your financial future. In each episode, we'll explore the key concepts that drive long-term success. Everything from building a strong foundation to making those all-important decisions as your wealth grows. You'll hear from experienced professionals who live and breathe this work every day, and from private investors who'll share what they've learned on a path to financial freedom. Our first series is called The Client Journey. Each episode takes you through a different stage of the financial planning process, helping you see what's ahead and, more importantly, what's possible. So whether you're just getting started or well on your way, there's something here for you. Let's begin the journey.
I never really know where the conversation will take us on the Eclipse Wealth podcast. In the early episode of The Client Journey, speaking with James Clark and Nick Marshall, we quite simply ran out of time. So I was particularly pleased that they wanted to come back and expand on a topic that we mentioned but never really discussed. So here is a bonus episode where the three of us discuss asset allocation. I'd like to start with a definition that I use for asset allocation when I'm talking to clients, and they may well disagree, in which case they'll tell you. But it's where the underlying portfolio manager will determine the proportion of capital to be invested in each of the major asset classes, which include equities, fixed income, and alternatives, and cash. And this risk-based division of a client's investments between the asset classes is generally called strategic asset allocation. Nick, do you want to sort of kick off and tell us how you apply asset allocation in your work?
I run a suite of products. I rely on my advisors to sit down with the client and work out what their attitude to risk is. People will label them different ways. I label them defensive, cautious, balanced, and growth. And the reason I do that is the goalpost or the sector that I operate in sets out specific guidelines where they will use equity allocation as a benchmark for risk. So my balanced fund will have between 40% and 85% exposure in equities. Our job is putting together all those asset classes you talked about, working out how much exposure to equities we want, working out whether we want to be fully dialed in at 85% or 40%. That's for us to decide. And within that, we then have to diversify again and strategically work out whether we want to be in Europe or the US. So there's lots of moving parts. But the end result always comes back to what level of risk is that portfolio. And there's lots of ways to chart risk. Mm. But simplistically, for me running a model portfolio, it's the goalpost I'm given in what's known as the Investment Association, the IA sector, which is 0.35, 20.60 for cautious, 40.85 for balanced, and 85 plus for flexible, or growth as it used to be called. So you've got your whole range there from zero exposure to 100% exposure. Strategically, a lot of work goes into it, as you can imagine. We will try and work out what our optimal exposure is. What would we do if interest rates are zero? Well, arguably fixed interest is not very exciting, for example. If inflation is high, you might want more in equities because they can beat inflation. So there's always moving parts. It's dynamic. We adjust tactically as well as just strategically. But that's always our starting point, and it's banging our heads, working out what the optimal allocation is on a risk-return basis across any given mandate that our clients have, which are the four available I've mentioned.
Thanks. James, do you want to add to that and also talk about how you actually do that in your work?
For me, strategic asset allocation is like a framework for portfolio construction. And it depends on exactly what you're constructing. But following on from Nick's example, I was thinking back to a model portfolio service that I used to manage, and we had four levels of risk. And again, it was based on equity content bandings. So for us at the time, it was 0 to 40%, 40 to 60, 60 to 80, and 80 to 100. So very similar setup to what Nick was talking about. And then for each of those four levels of risk, as well as that obvious equity content, which was literally in the name of the portfolios, there'd be a percentage allocation to fixed income and to alternative assets, and then the usually standard 2% cash allocation as well. So for me, that's your real fundamental starting point. That is the framework for your structural asset allocation. your strategic asset allocation.
And for some of our sort of first time investors listening to this, we've talked a bit about equities, and obviously that's the higher risk element of it that you referred to there. We've also made reference to fixed income securities, but it might be worthwhile expanding on that to what we mean. So fixed income securities are effectively you're lending money. So when you're lending money, there are several things you're interested in. One is, do I trust the person I'm lending it to or organization? When am I going to get my money back? And what's in it for me, i.e. the rates of return? That's a very, very simplistic overview. But underneath it, that's ultimately what we're doing when we're lending money in fixed income securities. So feel free to sort of touch a bit more on that. But also, you mentioned alternatives, and some of our listeners may not really understand what that is.
I mean, just expanding or extrapolating on the fixed interest comments there. We're talking about, there's a whole generation of people, Max, who have not experienced an interest rate cycle. The last time interest rates were 5%, give or take, was 2007-08, going into the financial crisis. And for our listeners or first-time investors in debt or fixed interest, generally speaking, when the interest rate's high, that's your pocket money, that's your dividend, that's your income. So when you have zero interest rates, which is what everyone's been trying to do since then with what's known as quantitative easing, fixed interest becomes very, not uninvestable by any means, but it's not as sexy as it used to be. And now interest rates have gone back up. They are coming down now, a little caveat. But all of a sudden, fixed interest in that multi-asset, strategic asset allocation you were both talking about, it's back in vogue. I used to have 10% in a medium risk. I've now got 20. Even my cash on deposit is earning me money. So for the first time since 2012, we can talk about proper multi-asset, proper strategic asset allocation. Because the gap we had, remember the pillars you mentioned at the beginning, we've got equities. If we're not in equities, I've got to have something else. Okay, so cash, not earning money. Okay, so it's fixed interest or alternatives. Now, I think I'll let James comment on alternatives. There's a whole vast array, myriad of products within the alternative space. But a lot of them have struggled, especially the hedge fund-esque target absolute return sector is what it's called. So even when our interest rates were down to zero, or zero interest rate policy, or ZIRP, I believe it was actually called. And when it was down there, we were trying to get out of equities and use the power of diversification and get into alternatives. The one everyone's probably heard of, mainly because it's up about 35% year to date, is gold. And gold's having a cracking run. So in my alternative space, I have an equity long short, a hedge fund. And thankfully, my biggest proportion of alternatives is in gold. So they've been driving the portfolios going forward. Not too much detail again, but ostensibly, gold shouldn't be a growth asset. It's a hedge against disaster. It's something you store in your cupboard just in case the world goes really bad. So I don't have it in my growth mandate, but it's certainly behaving a lot better than some of my growth funds at the moment. And over the long time, or longer period, like I said, we hold our investments for a long time. So for me, in terms of not tactical asset allocation, but in terms of structural, I have 5% in gold across my portfolios, except growth, because if things go wrong, that's what I want. That's the one, when all the equity funds are down, that's the one that's going to hopefully be positive. So it's managing those risks. But I mean, James, if you want to comment on some of the alts, I mean, I pitched before on a pure target absolute return mandate, and it was very hard work.
Okay, so in terms of other alternative assets, really, Max, the idea here is to invest in some assets whose returns would ideally be uncorrelated to those of fixed income and equities, and also providing some, you know, more interesting, slightly different kind of assets to invest in. So if we just run through a few, building on what Nick's already mentioned, commercial property. So you could, for example, invest in a fund that owns some bricks and mortar commercial property. That could be offices, student accommodation, warehouses, last mile logistics facilities, whatever any particular fund might specialize in. A slight extension of that would be infrastructure, which Nick has previously mentioned as well. So a fund of infrastructure assets could invest in either directly or by investing in the companies that in turn own them, things such as ports, airports, toll roads, communication towers, even data centers now in the last few years in particular. So that's commercial property and infrastructure, which can sometimes be lumped together, sometimes treated separately. We've also got absolute return funds, which Nick alluded to. So a potential minefield, some good ones, some bad ones. Nick mentioned long short equity, funds of structured products. So there's a small number of funds of structured products out there. So structured products, financial instruments offering a defined payoff over a defined period of time. A reasonable number of those can be amalgamated into a fund structure, which investors such as ourselves can own. So that qualifies for many under alternative assets. Gold, Nick's mentioned, and that can be a tracker of the gold price, or it could be a fund investing in companies involved in the gold industry, such as miners, gold mining companies. So there's a number of different options out there, and pull it all together. And there's some more exciting areas combined with some more reliable, more steady Eddie type areas.
Elaborating on James, I'm a big fan of infrastructure, but different people sometimes set their stall out. So I put my infrastructure in global equity, which I also have quite a big thematic. So I have a slight underweight to the US, but I'm overweight global thematics. But I put them all in the equity bucket because they are equity exposure. So gold miners, a very good example, infrastructure, healthcare, tech, and one other. They're all in my global bucket. But yeah, some people I do know are very good at putting infrastructure in alts and things like that. So the things I don't hold in that bucket are investment trusts. I don't hold property. I don't hold private equity because it's only in investment trusts. Our landscape's changing. There's lots of things you can invest in now, but they're quite hard to invest in.
I think what I'm hearing from you is there's a really broad range of different investments out there. And so this illustrates for the private investor the importance of getting good financial advice and also of using a professional investor, professional portfolio managers. I think what you've just heard there, what we've all just heard there, is the importance of tactical asset allocation, how when it's employed well, it can really, really add value. Managers can make changes in accordance with their convictions, their views, and how they see risks. So I think that may be a good point to close on this short session on asset allocation. Thanks very much again, Nick Marshall from Peregrine & Black and James Clark.
If you enjoyed listening to this section of the Client Journey series, then why not subscribe and listen to past and future episodes? You can find out more on our website at www.eclipsewealth.co.uk/podcast. Eclipse Private Office is a trading style of Peregrine & Black Investment Management Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority here in the UK. Please remember that this podcast is for educational and information purposes only. We are not advising whether a certain investment is suitable or not. Don't forget that the value of investments can go down as well as up, and past performance of an investment is not a predictor of future returns. However, if you are interested in discussing any of the topics raised, then please contact Peregrine & Black via our website to arrange to speak with an independent financial advisor. Thanks again for listening, and be sure to join us next time for more conversation along the client journey.